I have to be really annoying and repeat the question to everybody, okay? So when you ask your question, I'm just going to repeat it, so kind of like an interpreter.
With my hearing, I may need it.
All right, so who has the first question? Okay, wow. All right, way in the back, Vanessa. Yeah, so Okay. Basically questions about Muslims,
Yeah. Wanting
to know a little bit about what they believe.
Yeah, understand with the religion of Islam, there is great diversity. There really is. Islam as well is as much a culture as it is a religion. And oftentimes you'll come across Muslims who are more Muslim culturally than they are religiously. If you find that, they're a great candidate, because they haven't really been too ensconced in Islamic doctrine, and you may well succeed in talking with them about the gospel. To the degree that they're Islamic religiously, obviously that's going to become increasingly difficult. But there is much variation amongst them. Many of the Muslims in the Ivory Coast are of the more cultural kind, especially those that are Ivorian citizenry. As Muslims, they are more culturally so, easier to work with. As a matter of fact, they can be strikingly ecumenical. I've had plenty of them say to me, well, hey, we're going to the same place. You got your road, I got mine, I'll see you there, you know. And, of course, then I try to deal with that properly. But from what I understand, what I've learned in my studies is that some of the writing of the Quran took place in Mecca, where Muhammad was not accepted as a prophet, and those writings tend to be much more peaceful, gracious, calm. Other writings of the Quran were written in Medina, where he was accepted as a prophet, and where there were massacres of Jewish and Christian communities, and those passages tend to be much more what we would refer to as jihadist. So in a lot of ways, a Muslim is obligated to determine which part of the Quran he's going to accept literally and which part of the Quran he's going to accept allegorically. If he accepts the Meccan passages literally, then he's going to allegorize the jihadist passages, and he's not going to be strong in that at all, even if he doesn't come out and say that to you. But if he takes literally the Medinan passages, then he's going to be jihadist, and he's going to allegorize what's said in Mecca. But there is great diversity, and we find that great diversity in the Ivory Coast itself. As I said, the citizens that are Muslim tend to be much easier going. The immigrants, 25% of the population in the Ivory Coast is immigrant population from Senegal, from Guinea, Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, Togo, Benin. The 25% of the population is immigrant from those countries. The vast majority of that population is Muslim. They tend to be a little bit more difficult.
What's the percentage of Muslims in the Ivory Coast?
Half the people in the Ivory Coast are Muslim. But again, don't forget that 25% of that is immigrant. Yeah.
Okay. Tanya. How many languages?
Mm-hmm. The Ivory Coast is very unique in that it has coalesced extremely well around the French language. You, if you find yourself in the street of any town, any city in the Ivory Coast, French is what you're going to hear. That's excellent for us. The government has seen to that. The public education system is a function of the federal government, and if you are a public school teacher, they will never send you to teach in the area of the country that you're from, because they do not want you slipping into the local language in the classroom. They want to absolutely obligate you to use French in the classroom. So it's not that the Ivorians take French as a course. It's that their entire educational structure is done through the French language. That's of great help to us. The Ivory Coast has a total of 72 different ethnic groups, each one with its own language. So praise the Lord for the French. The Bangerville Church probably has 25 to 30 ethnic groups represented in it, because we're a metropolitan area. Again, thank God we all speak French. and that's what allows us to minister together, but 72 African languages. There is one trade language, the Jula language, but it really makes no sense to learn that language unless you want to specifically reach that group of people. Many of the other ethnic groups will speak Jula, but if I speak to them in Jula, they will answer me in French, and if I continue in Jula, they'll look at me and say, I'm not Jula. So there would be no reason to learn that unless I was targeting the Jula population.
Where did you train for French?
Quebec. It's been a wonderful year in Canada. Loved it. Yep.
Okay. What's so funny? Okay. Paul.
We do. We use the 1996 Osterwald, thankfully, whose New Testament comes from the Received Text. We're very thankful for that. Yeah. And we get those, I don't know if you're familiar with the Beams ministry here. I've probably gotten 4,000 free Bibles from Beams that we've shipped out there. Yeah.
Yeah, they do good work.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought I saw a hand over here. No? Sam?
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, sorry, two questions.
Yeah.
Number one is, now I've forgotten the first one because I was like so engrossed in the second one. How many churches have they started or helped start?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what's an example of a time where you didn't get a warm welcome?
I've personally been involved in starting four churches as well. I've worked to start four churches as well. I was involved in my first term with the starting of a fifth one. Those are the ones I've been involved in. And that period of time is necessary because, number one, I got to adapt to a culture. I have to understand, you know, how we do things in the Ivorian culture biblically. And for us Westerners, that takes a lot of time. Our culture is certainly different from theirs. So I have spent 30 years doing that. I am transitioning now. We're turning the works that we've started over to national leadership, and I am going to be working specifically with the Bible Institute and Seminary, and then going with our graduates as they go to start new works. Because they've completed their training, they're certainly qualified, apt, and able, and ordained to go start a work. But there are things I can do to help. A Westerner shows up in the Ivory Coast with automatic clout. I should use that to help them. So I can go with them to the city, and I can take them in to meet the mayor and to meet the city council, who will be happy to grant us audience, and just tell them, I'm the president of my mission here, I'm the general director of our Bible Institute Seminary, and this is a candidate from one of our churches, and he has completed his training, and we're sending him here to this city, and we'd like to meet with your construction department and see if there's a piece of land available that we might purchase to start a church. He's going to start miles ahead than if he just came into that town on his own and tried to do that. So there still is a role. I still can accompany a man ready for the ministry to help him in starting a new church and getting off to an excellent start in doing that. And that's what our future ministry looks like. Now, the Zonoplay welcome, as I told you, was just, I'd never experienced anything like that there. It was amazing. I talked about that all afternoon. Have I had less pleasant experiences? Yes, I have. And unfortunately, it's right in the area of Bangerville. It's a different ethnic group. Up there in Zonoplay, it's the Cherema group. Down where we are, it's the Abrié group. And they are perhaps the most animist group in the Ivory Coast and very difficult to work with. When we started the Bangerville church in the city, you see, a city's multi-ethnic, that's an easier context. It's a preferable context for a Westerner to start a church. But still, I wanted to be able to go out into the outlying villages and to be able to preach there. And without exception, they all said, no, can't do that. And they did not allow for us to do that until we opened a medical ministry and went in and helped them medically. And once we did that, then they allowed us to preach. Because if there's no preaching, there's no medicine, and they want the medicine. So now they allow the preaching. And even this fourth church we're starting in Anan is in a section of villages where our medical work has been very active, and it's that medical work that's allowing us to get that church up and running. So, yeah, where I am normally, a whole lot more hostile, at least on the village level. Because a village is one ethnic group. So they're very organized in their tradition, and they're very organized in their resistance to the gospel. Whereas a city is multi-ethnic, and you don't really have anywhere near that kind of resistance to working with people.
Okay, let's go to Julie first, and then we'll come over here. I'm not repeating that.
Yeah, j'ai mal entendu. Yeah, yes. The instruction that we received in Quebec was very good, and it came from somebody who had actually been trained in France. The French in Ivory Coast is French. It's not a dialect. It's not a... Absolutely. The Ivorians watch France 24 every day. They get every bit of it. Yeah, I mean, you understand there's an accent difference, but it's by no means extreme. There are going to be some expressions. The Ivorians have some very colorful ways of saying things. It's a lot of fun to listen to sometimes. Yeah. That's true, but I think you'd be surprised. You know Eric Levier? He was the pastor at L'Église Baptiste Centrale à Laval. He's now the pastor at Faithway Baptist Church. He's pure Quebecer. He teaches for me two times a year in my institute. My students love him. So he's able to come out and use his French-speaking capabilities to teach. It works. We had another Quebec couple come out one time. You know, you kind of got to tune the frequency a little bit, and then boom, you're good.
That's too easy. Okay, right here. Why French and not English? A lot of French questions.
Okay, in sub-Saharan West Africa, really all of Africa, it was principally divided up colonial-wise between the English and the French. So there were some colonies that were to England, and there were some that were to French. As they won their independence in the 50s and the 60s, they tended to stick with the language of the colony because it was already entrenched there. They also tended to stick with the governments. You know, France is very centralized in its government. England is much more decentralized in its government. So you see those characteristics as well in between the different countries. So, and the boundaries, I'll tell you this as well, the boundaries that are there in Africa were not done by the Africans. They were done by the colonialists. They were done in 1885 at one of the treaties of Berlin, along with a number of other amendments that were passed. Unfortunately, it was their desire to split up the ethnic groups because they felt if they had one big ethnic group in one colony, they would tend to revolt. So a lot of the borders of the countries in Africa really don't make sense from an African perspective because, the Africans would have never put the Hutus and the Tutsis in the same country, never. That happened because of colonization. But you see the difference in the French and English because of colonization is a direct result of that. Yeah. I'm sorry? Yes. Lots of things, yeah. But again, let me say, if we drop, Mali is French-speaking, Burkina Faso, Senegal, we can drop down into those countries. You're not going to hear French on the street. They say it's the official language. What that means is what's used in medicine and law. But it's not really what's spoken on the street. You come into Abidjan with me or Bangerville or any other cities, French is what you're going to hear. It's very unique and it's very helpful to us. Yeah.
Somebody from this side? I feel like my back is to you. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, I get to ask this often. None of those guys that came to those meals, to my knowledge, ever came to a saving knowledge of Christ, which is a shame. But I was responsible to give them the gospel, and I'm so thankful that I could find a context in which I could do that. As well, the reason why we have the literacy center going is because illiteracy in the Ivory Coast is most prominent in the Islamic immigrant population. So if you open a literacy center, you don't even have to advertise for them. The demographics will tell you that most of your students will be Muslim, and they are. And so we are giving those Muslims the gospel consistently for 3 years, and if they decide to stay on, it could be as many as six. And that's our responsibility. It's to make the gospel clear to them so that they understand it. They're not coming in droves to accept Christ, but we do have Islamic converts in our church in Bangerville where they have. But we've just got to find a way to be able to present the gospel to them in a way that they can understand. And that does not necessarily come through one casual conversation. We have to create a scenario in which we have continual contact with them in order to be able to do that. The Literacy Center does that, like my lunches did in the past.
Well, and majority of your ministry has been seeing a way to creatively meet a need, basketball,
yeah, right.
Literacy Center, medical,
right.
All those things to be able to reach people.
Correct.
Yeah, it's good. Mary, do you have your hand up?
Great question. Really, throughout all these years, we have had no difficulty with the government. It declares itself to be secular. For the first years that we were out there, it was run by a Catholic. Since 2010, it's been run by a Muslim. But he is married to a Jewish lady with French nationality, so you know he's not praying five times a day. He is by no means strict as a Muslim. Unfortunately, it has brought a lot of Muslims into the bureaucracy where you are going to find varying levels of strictness. But up until this point in time, we have not been kept from doing anything that we wanted to do. There generally is a reasonable structure in which we can do what we want to, and if we respect that structure, then we don't have difficulty. As time progresses, you know, the Ivory Coast won its independence in 1960s, so we're looking at 65 years now, that the bureaucracy continues to develop, regulations continue to develop. And so it is true, you know, back in 95 when we first went in, it was like, oh, you're a missionary, leave your paperwork on the table and do what you want, you know. It's not quite like that today. There are more hoops to jump through, more agencies to communicate with, so on and so forth, but still, they've done nothing to impede what we would like to do. Should that happen in the future, I'll be perfectly honest with you, should that happen in the future, it will be because of pressure from the United Nations. Yeah. They've already passed resolutions that they're imposing. You know, I now have to submit an annual accounting of what I'm doing ministerially there. That's a requirement that came down from the United Nations that's more or less being imposed on the Ivory Coast. Wow.
Nice. Okay. All right. Yes, sir. Brother Massacre.
Yeah, another great question, because we've had our times. You know, we had a real bad moment in the 2000 elections, and then in 2002, war really did break out, and it lasted to 2010, because as I mentioned, we first went to Zanapan in 2008, so it was in that span of time where the country was divided between the government and the rebel leaders. I need to be discreet, so I'm going to be very careful. What happened in the Ivory Coast was not a civil conflict. It was an internationally funded conflict to meet international desires, taking advantage of some local sentiment. That's what it was. The international interests have been met since 2010. So although we just had elections last Saturday, and the incumbent going for his fourth term when he's only constitutionally allowed one, I think that things will continue to remain calm, because the instability that we've had in our country was when international interests were not honored and not from conflict within the country itself. Now we'll see. Hopefully the peace will remain there. But from 2002 to 2011, yeah, it was pretty rough. Yeah, y'all might remember the story when war broke out in 2002, my wife decided to go into labor with our fourth. So me and her at the house, having this baby. I had a book entitled Where There Is No Doctor. Chapter 13, Childbirth. You talk about cramming for an exam, brother. I was cramming for an exam. Oh my soul. God blessed it.
All right, Kim.
Yeah. That's a great question because it's so pertinent. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. It's not only Nigeria that has a big problem. Mali has a big problem. Burkina Faso has a big problem. Niger has a big problem. Guinea has almost as big a problem. And they are all, well, Guinea, Mali, Burkina Faso are bordering countries. Niger is close. Nigeria is just a few countries down the line. Guinea, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger have all fallen to coup governments, and all those coup governments have aligned themselves with Russia. So there is no opening to the West whatsoever. In addition to these coup governments being aligned with Russia, they have uncontrollable jihadist elements within themselves that they are unsuccessfully combating. As a matter of fact, I just heard, was listening to somebody, I forget who and where, but they were more or less saying that Mali is very soon going to become a type of Al-Qaeda affiliate. So it's bad. It's not just what we're hearing about Nigeria. These countries border ours. The reality is today, I cannot go up to Zanapay on the border with Burkina Faso, and for the very first time, it's the Ivorian people telling me I can't. Throughout all the conflict of 2002 to 2010, they were very easygoing. Pastor, you can be here. Nothing's going to happen. Everything will be okay. And to a large degree, they were right, really. Today, every time I think I talk about going up there, they just say, Pastor, there's no sense in going up there. Refugee camps have been opened in the north of Ivory Coast for Burkina refugees. But how do they know who's a refugee and who's not? So please do pray for that. Because that area of the country of the continent is destabilizing very quickly. It has not happened in our country yet. Independent Baptist, somewhere between 35 and 40, nice. Scattered throughout the country. Because we've had missionaries, Independent Baptist missionaries, in there for, well, since about 1975. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Debbie.
I am not aware of any place where Sharia law is in practice. That doesn't mean it's not happening, but it's by no means widespread. And I don't think the government would allow it. In spite of an Islamic president, they are very determined in their secular position. They will not honor any religion, you know.
Okay, Julia.
How long have you lived? 30 years. We went there in 1995. You know, that was before the internet.
He doesn't look that old, does he?
That was before.
Good answer.
That was before cell phones. As a matter of fact, when I first went out there to try to be able to talk with people back in Canada and the United States, I purchased this amateur radio off this guy with a big antenna because the call on a landline from the Ivory Coast is going to cost me like $5 a minute, and I couldn't do that. So I bought an amateur radio and a tower and everything because I have an amateur radio license from the States, and I was going to set all that up and use that to try to be able to call family back in the States and talk to people back in the States. In the end, the internet came. I never set it up. But
do you still have all the equipment?
I sold it off.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Vanessa. Say that again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it possible for the whole world to change and become Christians?
Yeah, well, I mean, possible. If we're going to use the word possible, I think we would answer that by saying yes. You know, we look at the Great Commission and we think, wow, we got 7 billion people in the world today. That is an insurmountable task that we're never, ever able going to be able to achieve. Yet the fact of the matter is, if each Christian won one person to Christ each year, we would attain that 7 billion in one generation, 34 years. Now, don't do the math now. Do it when you get home. But it is true. If every Christian, you know, one year, first year you have one, second year you have two, the next year you have four, the next year you have eight, you follow that through, you get to 7 billion in about 34 years. So what's the possibility? I think we have to recognize that at least theoretically, God has not given us an insurmountable task. And we need to be about doing it. Now, what we do recognize, Vanessa, is that there is resistance. We do have an adversary, and he is active. And he's active here, and he's active elsewhere around the world. So he is intentionally trying to impede our efforts to bring people to Christ. I think we recognize from the scriptures that although we might say it would be possible, because Christ died for everyone, I believe that firmly, the scriptures do not seem to indicate to us that that is, in fact, what's going to happen. So I think we realize that the whole world will not become Christian. But we see our part in working towards that.
Paul? Is there ever a concern that a militant group will use their buildings?
No. I have, no. And what's convenient for us is we're all the way down in the south. We're all the way down on the coast, which is the absolute furthest away from that kind of a thing. No. Could it happen? It's Africa, sure. If there was some kind of a massive coup and some kind of thing took over, could it happen? I'd be foolish to say no, it couldn't. But there is nothing transpiring right now that gives me any concern about that. We have title on that land. The government recognizes that title. So it would take a complete overthrow of the governmental structure of the country for us to lose that. Yeah.
Steve.
In the area that Jesus asked you to build
a
church there,
was it difficult to find someone to take that over? Well, the reality is this. Kalibali, the older guy, he had already had 3.5 years of Bible Institute training. He had been in our he had been saved in our church for going on 10 years at that point in time. Very wise guy, smart guy, calm. You know, his grandmother could die or he could win $1 million. Same reaction, you know, just calm. Smart, mature, and he pastored that church. And so, I mean, it was a slam dunk. Once we got the permission to open the church, again, remember, that's the Cherma language up there. He's the only one in the Bainesville church that speaks it. When he passed away in January of 2021, it was brutal. We went for a couple of years before we could get Isaac up there, and Isaac was our only candidate because he's the only guy from our group that speaks Cherma. So he's setting it up now. But now, all that, the funeral happened in March of 2008. For the rest of 2008, we sent up delegations from the Bainesville Church once a month. We wanted our people to see that village. We wanted to evangelize more. We wanted to edify those that had come to Christ. And then we opened the church in January of 2009. Later that year, we did groundbreaking for the building. And I'm telling you, it's wide open up there. I mean, politically right now, it's very unstable. But when we did the groundbreaking, I had no less than 10 other chiefs in the surrounding area tell me, when you're stable here in Zonoplay, come on over to our place. We'll be happy to have you. Wide open. Mine open.
Okay, Tanya again.
They may not. We have members of our church who have Muslim brothers and sisters or parents. Not a problem. There have been other ones where, yes, they accepted Christ, they're out of the family. And the local church at that point in time sticks its neck out and helps support that person, getting them involved in some type of occupation that will then allow them to take care of themselves. That can happen. But it really depends.
Lorna?
Mm-hmm. Wives have definitely a lesser standing than husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever led a Muslim wife to the Lord?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, has she been able to practice faith?
Mm-hmm.
While he's thinking, the question is, has he ever been able to lead a Muslim lady to the Lord and her be able to practice her faith even under a Muslim husband?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm struggling to come up with that specific example in our ministry because I just have so much more access to the men. Depending on the strictness of their Islam, a lot of Muslim women will not carry on a conversation with me. Some will. Well, it can be cultural or religious, one or the other. Yeah. Correct. Generally speaking, in the Ivory Coast, I think to a large degree, equality is respected, not necessarily practiced, but at least understood and respected to a degree. That certainly is less so in the Islamic community. There's no question about that either. But as I mentioned earlier, with the great diversity that we see in the Islamic community, that can really vary. If we have won a wife to the Lord, it would have been in our literacy center and then would have continued to work with her through that. Yeah.
Okay. Let me go over here because you've already asked a couple. Andrea.
Okay, healthcare question.
Yeah.
So you have an outpatient clinic?
We did, yes.
We used to.
We, uh-huh. There is a public health care system. It's a little challenging. It is not completely socialized. I think there is some government subsidizing of it. I mean, they're all government employees. But you do pay for consultation. Generally speaking, in a public hospital now, I think it's 1,000 franc, which at today's exchange rate, Canadian, would probably be about $3. Probably half that for a child. If you're getting tests done, you are going to pay something for that. They have talked about putting it completely under the government, but I haven't seen anything that really indicates going in that direction. There's also private health care, and that's typically where we go. The private health care in the country, a lot of Lebanese are doctors in the Ivory Coast. We have a lot of Lebanese doctors there in the private health care system. And that's principally where we're getting our care as a missionary family, which is considerably better than the public health. Yeah.
Okay. Let's, Paul? What kind of vehicles and how difficult is it to travel?
Yeah. Well, in 1999, I bought a 1995 Mitsubishi Pajero, which is like the Montero that's up here. And I drove that thing all the way to 2021.
Wow.
Yeah. At that point in time, the Lord really blessed. I was able to get a 2022 Toyota Tundra, a very big one, which did not come from my missionary support. Okay, just so we'll be clear on that. A Lebanese guy had imported it from the United States into the country, and I was able to get that through different means. It's actually technically a mission vehicle, but I'm the president. So. Most of us that have come into the countries, we look for those kinds of vehicles, Toyota Land Cruisers, Nissan Pathfinders or 4Runners, Mitsubishi Pajeros. You know, in Abidjan, yes, we do have paved roads, but everyone eventually is on a dirt road somewhere. And you just bottom out all the time and anything else. And so that's typically what we've bought, those kinds of vehicles.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we're headed there. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we're headed there. You know, my Tundra is currently functioning, but it does things that I've never seen before in my entire life. And I have no idea what I'm going to do, honestly, because the mechanics of it does not keep up with what we have here in the West. You know, even I've rented two cars since I've been back. These cars scream at me for, I'm hearing alarms and whistles and lights flashing on my, I'm driving along here, ding, 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 ding. I look down, I see a cup of coffee. It's telling me it's time to stop and get my coffee break.
Praise the Lord for that.
But there's no Tim Hortons out there.
Fair enough. All right, Julia. How would you introduce Christianity to someone who doesn't know what to believe in? Is that your question? Okay.
You know, it depends on the person and the circumstance, but a lot of times I just start by talking about my own personal experience, you know, especially if they have seen something in me that they've liked or appreciated, you know. Maybe I gave them something, did this, and they'll say, boy, that's really nice, I appreciate you giving it to me. And, you know, that opens the door. I say, well, you know, I'm really not that good myself, you know. You see any good in me, it comes from Christ because he saved me from my sin. And that just kind of allows that to come out and get on the table. So a lot of times, you know, you may not have all the theological or Bible answers, but you can influence with what God's done for you. And you explain that to them. And if they ask you a question you don't know the answer, you just say, hey, you know, that's a great question. I'll get back to you on it. And then you come and talk to your scholar and get the answer, and then you go back and give it. But that's a marvelous question. There are a lot of people out there that are going to say that. They don't know what to believe. You know, you talk about God, and they say, yeah, but I don't understand this, I don't understand that, da-da-da-da. You say, well, I'm going to be honest with you. I knew I was a sinner. I knew I was condemned. And I learned that Christ died for me, and that reconciles me to God. That puts me in God's family. And so when I accepted him, it put me in God's family. I got to tell you, that's a decision I'm never going to regret. I'm never going to change. That can influence them. Yeah.
All right, Maya, and then one more. What are the living conditions out there?
Yeah, it depends upon where you are. The Ivory Coast is very diverse. I don't think you'd have any problem with my home right now. We moved into it in 2021. We were in another one that was much older, but we moved into this one. I think you'd be comfortable in it. It's in a newer neighborhood there in Bangerville. But yet I can drive you 3 miles down into a neighborhood. Honestly, you know, you'll probably be in tears. So great diversity. And we see that even in our church because we have people from both neighborhoods coming to our church. We have the city, and we have a certain affluent strata of people in that city. The Ivory Coast is the world's largest exporter of cocoa, third or fourth in coffee, hardwoods, a number of other things. There are a lot of Ivorian families that got in on that in the get-go, and very, very affluent by our standards, very rich. But then there are others, I'm telling you, it's definitely a third world country. And it can be very, very, very difficult. So great diversity in Ivory Coast. You can really see both sides.
Maya's main question is, if she were to come visit, would she have her own room?
Yeah, we have two guest rooms in our home. We have two. Yeah.
She's pretty passionate about that right now.
Yeah.
All right, Kim, last question.
No, you know, it's a very, very good question. Have the Ivorian people been ill-treated by the West. Yes, they have, especially the French people that were in the country. Just the way it is. As well, they've been very ill-treated by the Lebanese people that are in the country. Because of that, if an Ivorian were to suspect that I could be French or Lebanese, they may not demonstrate friendship to me until I greet them. And as soon as I stick a hand out and greet them in a way that they're accustomed to being greeting, they're going to light up like a Christmas tree. They are a very hospitable people, a very tolerant, a very accepting people. It really is very, very rare that I sense hostility there. Sometimes I'll be traveling the interior of the country and I'll stop, get on my vehicle, and they're putting gas in it or something like that, and I might see somebody glaring at me or something like that. I'm just going to work my way over to them and talk to them. And in a short period of time, that's gone. So because of certain experiences, they may come across that way at the beginning, but you really can overcome it very quickly, especially if you are aware of certain of their customs and practices and you demonstrate respect for them.